Hi there, my name is Vince Salerno, and welcome to the Vince Salerno Podcast. If you're looking for a place to get your weekly filmmaker fix, well, you've come to the right place. On this podcast, I discuss the latest in movie news, such as trailers, rumors, and more. I also discuss trends in the film industry and give my own insight as a filmmaker with special guests that are friends and film fans alike. As a filmmaker, I'm always learning new things through different techniques and perspectives, and I'm happy to have you all join me as we talk about the things that excite and unite us. So grab your popcorn and a nice cold drink, sit back and relax, because the Vince Salerno Podcast starts right now. Alrighty, welcome back one and all to the Vince Salerno Podcast. This is obviously episode 52. I'm recording this one on Sunday, April 11th, 2021, which for you Catholics out there, you know it's Divine Mercy Sunday. So happy Divine Mercy Sunday, Jesus, I trust in you. I'm back more are less delayed, I should say, than I have been in the past, trying to keep up with the podcast episodes for you guys. My long WandaVision review is still in the works with Eric Wells. We talked for a long time. I still got a lot of work to do on that, so it'll be coming out very soon. I did want to make a correction on last week's episode. I referred to Cobra Kai as 1984's Cobra Kai instead of 1984's Karate Kid, because the suggestion that I was making about something that I had watched recently was for Karate Kid, not Cobra Kai. But obviously, when you're talking about two titles in the same franchise, you tend to mix them up. And I feel a little embarrassed doing that, because Cobra Kai and Karate Kid are obviously two separate installments in the Karate Kid franchise, very different from each other, of course. So I apologize. I meant to say 1984's Karate Kid, not Cobra Kai. I'm going at it solo today, so hopefully this will mean it's a shorter episode. We'll see what happens. But yeah, let's get right into it, guys. First, we're going to talk about what we've watched, or I guess more specifically, what I have watched. And a couple of things. Right now, I recently finished two Jesus-themed TV shows / movies. Obviously, Easter just happened, so naturally you'd be getting your Easter fix, and whether that's Easter Bunny, funny, whimsical, fantasy stuff like that, or Jesus Christ resurrection-based stuff. So I've been watching one of my all-time favorite mini-series. It's technically a mini-series, but I refer to it as a movie because it's on Amazon Prime. It's a six-hour film, but Jesus of Nazareth by Franco Zeffirelli. This dramatizes the birth, life, ministry, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus, largely according to the Christian Bible's New Testament Gospels. So, you know, me being, I'm Catholic, so I saw their attempts to kind of streamline the story into a six-hour series/film and still not cover a lot of the big brushstrokes, I think. But they did a pretty good job. I like this adaptation mostly because of Robert Powell's portrayal of Jesus. He has this very well-rounded, very layered, and just very interesting portrayal of Jesus to watch. There are times when Jesus is experiencing such great joy and happiness, and he's proclaiming the word of God with such conviction. And it's not like a happy, peaceful, hippie kind of vibe. It's with like real conviction, like this is the truth, this is the way, this is the life. And it's pretty fantastic. They portray a lot of biblical characters from back in the day with a lot of great gravitas, such as Yorgo Voyagasi, I think is Yorgo Voyagas, who plays Joseph, the father of Jesus, and He plays him with such reverence and conviction to being the husband to Mary in an unlikely marriage. You get Christopher Plummer as Herod, who actually does a really good job, God rest his soul. And Bancroft plays Mary Magdalene. Not as much of her in this series as you would think, and I don't think what she portrays is the most... It's not a high part of the film. I think that's just because we don't see a lot of her. Anthony Quinn as Caiaphas. Ian McShane, a very young Ian McShane as Judas. We get Ernest Borgnine playing a centurion who befriends Jesus. James Ferrantino playing Simon Peter. What a performance from him. Like, I get upset at some of these biblical portrayals of the Bible because some of them don't get the apostles right. This is the first time I've seen a really fascinating performance of Simon Peter. And I really like that. Michael York. Oh my gosh. Michael York playing John the Baptist. What a performance. So many other great actors. Ian Holm, Rod Steiger, Laurence Olivier. So many great actors. James Earl Jones is in this too. I could go on and on and on about all the great actors and actresses in this series. But it's one of my favorites, if nothing else, for just the portrayal of Jesus. The next one I saw was actually a Discovery Plus exclusive called The Resurrection, which, you know, I actually thought was a pretty decent film. And I was a little disappointed, though, to find out that this is actually the first couple episodes of AD, The Bible Continues, recut into a film. And that kind of feels a little cheap to me, like you're recutting a series into just to be a film, just to like market it again when you're marketing the exact same thing but different and calling it Resurrection. Something about that just doesn't rub me the right way, but if it's a precursor to get you into the series, even though it's the first couple episodes of that series, it works because I think it's a great portrayal of the apostles' fear with Jesus' death and his resurrection and fully understanding what they had to do and putting themselves in you know, as sheep among wolves, as they say, to proclaim the word of God and how God really protected them when they put themselves out there. And so it is a good movie. It is, however, cheapened by the fact that it is a recut, repurposed edition of the first two AD The Bible Continues episodes, which I've never seen, but I just think there's something that just not really appealing about that. It's like, why would I watch this movie when I could watch the series? Why not just remarket the series? I don't know. Anyways, last two things I've seen recently. I rewatched Tron with my girlfriend who had never seen Tron, and I thought she was going to hate it because it's a, you know, boring science fiction movie with a very confusing plot and lack of character development. But she actually really enjoyed it. And I found that, you know, for me, the original Tron, there's a lot of stuff that works in this film, and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work in this film. Most notably, the characters are just not that interesting. There's no real story or stakes or character development. It's just, it's all A plot and no B plot. And that's what this film was missing that Tron Legacy really capitalized on words. So I appreciate Tron for what it is and the effects. I mean, the effects are groundbreaking. I mean, back in the day, this movie was considered revolutionary for special effects. So you got to give it credit for that, of course. But I'm certainly glad that we have Tron Legacy to kind of delve into the greater story aspects of the film or the franchise, so to speak. And I hope that Tron 3 happens. Apparently Jared Leto and Garth Davis are going to be teaming up for a new one called Tron Ares. Just give me Tron 3, please. I have been waiting so long for Tron 3 and I cannot wait for it. All right, moving on. Last but not least, I am watching The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I'm kind of mixed on it. Honestly, right now it's not really doing... It's doing some things well and it's doing other things Not so well, I think. Personally, this show seems to be veering in a very overly political direction, and it wants to tackle a lot of darker, relevant themes, which I just, you know, people don't, I don't personally think people really want to delve into these things. Like, the Marvel movies, television is truly meant to, for escapism. It's to separate yourself from the world, because the world kind of sucks, especially right now. And the last thing we need to be seeing, I think, from this is just more discussion about racial tension. But I mean, I don't know, I've talked to some friends who don't see what I'm seeing, and I'm trying to give the show a fair shot, because there is a lot to like, and there is a lot that just kind of rubs me the wrong way. You know, one of the things is that it's just a much darker I've considered this series to be basically Captain America 4. It's a 6-hour movie repurposed into a TV show. But you know, thinking about it too, the Captain America comic books, I know, they got dark. They really did get darker, and they tackled some of these things. And I guess that's just kind of a shock for me, something I have to get used to. Because the show is good, and I am enjoying a lot of aspects of it, but it's not focusing on some aspects that I wish it would. It's probably the best way I can put that. So it's only episode 4. We have 2 more episodes left, so we'll see where it goes for Captain America, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is what it should have been called, if I'm being honest. All right, well, let's get into our current events. We got a couple things to get through today, so let's just jump right in. Number one, I told you guys I was going to make this episode a how the coronavirus has affected the film industry part 6, but really, I'm just not interested in covering it in the depth that I used to cover it in. There are a couple articles and things I want to talk about in the first couple of current events, and that'll kind of be me talking about what's going on with the coronavirus and the film industry. So first and foremost, number one, I don't even know if anybody remembers this story. This is a couple of weeks old, and it kind of got buried in a lot of other big news stories. But according to, well, it's reported by The Hollywood Reporter, Paramount Plus is apparently going to be debuting movies like Mission Impossible 7 and A Quiet Place 2, and they have secured the streaming rights for No Time to Die, the 25th James Bond film. These movies will drop on Paramount Plus 45 days after theatrical launch, which is good. I like this. This is great. This means that we're going to get about a month and a half until these movies are in theaters. After that time, they will be jumping on streaming, which means they will get a fair shot at the box office, which is very unlike a lot of services like Warner Brothers and Disney Plus, where Warner Brothers is doing a direct to the service system where a movie goes into theaters and it drops on HBO Max for free the same day if you're an HBO Max subscriber. Disney Plus is doing something similar to where if a movie drops in theaters the same day, you can buy it for $30 and stream it at the comfort of your home, which I think is fair. It's like, all right, if you want to stream a movie early when it's in theaters, you have to pay for it at least. but I already also believe personally that the theatrical system is still viable, and people still prefer that over seeing a big blockbuster film, something like Ryan the Last Dragon or even Black Widow, which just recently actually got the same Disney Plus same day release treatment. But this article in The Hollywood Reporter reports that Mission Impossible 7 and A Quiet Place Part 2, which are slated to be released in theaters September 17th and November 19th, will debut on Paramount Plus 45 days after the big screen runs. Paw Patrol the movie is also on that list. Not that anybody cares. At least I don't. Meanwhile, new installments of Paranormal Activity and Pet Cemetery will also be Paramount Pictures / Paramount Plus films, which means they'll be making their debut on Paramount Plus. That's interesting. Additionally, MGM movies, including the upcoming James Bond movie No Time to Die, will find its streaming home on Paramount Plus, thanks to a new expansion deal with MGM-owned Epix. This service will include 250,000... Whoa, I did not read that right. 2,500 movies in total to launch, including 700 titles from the Miramax library. So that's interesting. It seems that Sony / MGM... Well, no, Sony's not even... They don't have the rights to Bond anymore. My mistake. MGM and Paramount have teamed up, so they will get a lot of their titles, similar to the 20th Century Fox Disney Plus deal, except, you know, they're not being bought out by Disney. So this is good. I mean, I just think this is a great system because, again, you get to have... these films have a fair shot at the theatrical window. And then we get to have them do their streaming, which they'll do good business in streaming. I'm sure they will. But I think most people would prefer, we don't have numbers, but I'm sure people would prefer to see these movies in theaters as opposed to streaming them at home. I mean, heck, look at King Kong versus Godzilla or Godzilla versus Kong. That movie made about $250 million at the box office, which actually, that'll bring us into topic number two, which is Godzilla and Kong crushing it at the opening box office weekend, setting new records in a pandemic era world. So this is an article from Variety. Godzilla versus Kong muscles its way to a pandemic-era box office record, giving Hollywood studios and theater owners alike hope that people are ready to return to the movies after a year of watching Netflix at home. Well, I could have told you that. I've been telling you that for the past year. The tentpole from Warner Brothers and Legendary Entertainment generated $32 million over the box office weekend and $48.5 million in its first five-day theatrical release. That exceeded the industry's expectations and easily marked the biggest debut since coronavirus hit. Prior to this weekend, Wonder Woman 1984 had the biggest three-day start with 16.7 million, followed by Tom and Jerry with 14 million. All Warner Brothers films, no doubt. Was that right? Was that number right that I gave about the 250 million? Let's see. At the international box office, where Godzilla vs. Kong opened last weekend, revenues for the monster mashup have surpassed $236 million. It brought in another $71 million overseas this weekend, including a strong $44 million in China, bringing the film's global total to $285 million. Okay, so I wasn't too off, but clearly I was off a bit. The movie cost $165 million to produce and will require outsized ticket sales to turn a profit. And no doubt this film is going to continue to do big business because, again, just these numbers tell me, at least, that people want to get out. They're sick of this pandemic. They are sick of being forced into their houses, and they want to get out. They want to see a movie. And they want to do what they just want to go out and live their lives, you know? Not to get too political, of course, we don't get political on the Vince Leno podcast, but that Disney Plus is a big proponent of the freedom of choice. If people want to choose to go to the movies, they can. If they want to stream these big movies at home, they have that choice, but they have to pay $30 for it. So I think the freedom of choice, the ability to choose these options, how we seem fit, what we personally want to do and don't want to do, is great. It's nothing but great news. So, and it only means that we'll get closer and closer to returning to normalcy in such a chaotic time that we've been living in. So that was current events 1 and 2. Number 3, this is interesting. Knives Out 2 and 3 sell to Netflix for eye-popping $400 million. Daniel Craig and Rian Johnson set to return. So this is from the Entertainment Weekly. Let's see. The streaming service is striking a massive deal to acquire two sequels, the 2019 Whodunit Knives Out, for more than $400 million. Rian Johnson will return to direct, with Daniel Craig starring as Benoit Blanc, the super sleuth modeled on Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot. According to Deadline, which first reported the news, Johnson has already written the sequels, and production on the first follow-up is starting up in Greece in June. Interesting. The Knives Out Twitter account, which has continued to be The Knives Out Twitter account, which has continued to be a cheeky presence for fans long after the film debuted, responded with the news by tweeting, "What?" That's interesting. Okay, so yeah, this is going to be cool. I really enjoyed Knives Out. Wasn't a perfect film per se, but I thought it was really fascinating. I thought the characters were fun. I thought Daniel Craig as a American Kentucky Fried drawl detective was pretty fun, as Chris Evans says in the movie. I think it's interesting that these movies sold to Netflix. So does that mean we're not going to see them in theaters? And why would they be sold out like this? It's all very interesting. I kind of don't know why Rian Johnson would favor the streaming option over the theatrical option. And it's really interesting. And I think this is obviously a sign that the streaming wars is still in progress, and studios are ranking up their libraries, and Netflix is kind of I think they're struggling to have a library as diverse and as engaging as something like Disney or Warner Brothers. Obviously, some of their own original movies and television shows are great, like Stranger Things and House of Cards, all those things. But, you know, I don't think it's enough to keep people on for just that stuff alone. Like, you know, Disney has the MCU. They have Star Wars. They have Pixar. They have a lot of things. Warner Brothers has the DC Cinematic Universe, or whatever the heck it's being called right now. They have Tom and Jerry. They have the Looney Tunes. They have all sorts of big properties. And Netflix is kind of losing all those ever since all these services have started to make their own services. And they actually just acquired the streaming rights to all of these Spider-Man movies too. So, and that's a kind of a big hit for Disney apparently too. So it's interesting. I hope that these movies do end up going out on in theaters. I'd be really disappointed if they didn't, but I guess time will tell. In any case, I mean, I don't have Netflix either, so I'd probably have to jump on a friend's account or something. So we'll see how that goes. All right, current event number four. DC cancels The Trench and New Gods. Does this mean the Snyderverse is being restored? Probably not. So, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Warner Brothers canceled Ava DuVernay's New Gods movie, which would have made Darkseid the main villain, or the main character, so to speak, and James Wan's Aquaman spinoff, The Trench. The studio stated that the films did not fit their current schedule for DC projects. They could be revived down the line, however. So, apparently, they also say DC is plotting its films and shows to be in a shared universe. So films like Aquaman 2, Black Adam, and Shazam 2, and Wonder Woman 3 will all be, you know, occupying that same universe. The only exception, obviously, is, of course, the Batman, which is confirmed to be in an alternate Earth known as Earth 2. So this is interesting because we know that The Flash is coming out, and The Flash is supposed to be this big universe-spanning or multiverse-spanning film with Ben Affleck's Batman and possibly Michael Keaton and Ezra Miller's Flash, and maybe other DC characters as well. I really hope that this is a sign that they're trying to kind of retool the DCEU to be one shared single universe, and that it is kind of in conjoined with everything that Zack Snyder has built up, because that seems to be the most successful stuff. I have not seen the Snyder cut of Justice League, but people seem to really gravitate towards that. I just automatically, as a film fan, as someone who wants to see a great filmmaker see his vision out the exact way he saw it, and a big fan of Superman, who got kind of shafted in these last couple films, and it's not been on screen for a long time. Warner Brothers needs to freaking make a Man of Steel 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 11, 12. Like, come on. Why are they refusing to do this? It's what the audience wants. It really is. I don't understand it. It's the most baffling thing ever. But the cutting of these projects makes me think that they are moving in a direction that includes a film series that is more focused. And because they haven't been focused for a long time, they have been making projects and announcing projects that are just all over the place. And they need unity. They need a plan. And gosh, I hope this is a sign that they have a plan, because I was not interested in any of these movies. I forgot these movies are coming out. Like, I had no interest in seeing The Trench or a New Gods movie. And I know that Darkseid is in the Justice League Snyder Cut. And so probably because, like, anybody who wants to see something from Darkseid wants to see that version of Darkseid, not whatever version Ava DuVernay would have done. All due respect to her. I don't really have an opinion of her as a filmmaker. I haven't seen enough of her films to really say how I feel about her. All I know is that she made Wrinkle in Time, and that movie was not good. Not good at all. Yeah. So I guess, again, this might be a sign that DC is focusing their plan for these characters in these projects. Hopefully in a brand new Justice League film that will still have connections to the Zack Snyderverse or whatever. I don't know. If Zack Snyder is truly done with this universe, then I'm fine with that. I just want them to focus and have a plan, because who doesn't want to see these characters cross over in a big, epic Avengers-style movie? Make it different from Avengers, of course. Don't do the same thing, but come on. Let's get the ball rolling. Let's get some awesome DC Cinematic Universe projects going. Let's get that interconnectivity going. Come on. Give us something to be excited about. And Man of Steel 2. Henry Cavill, Superman, bring him back, bring him back. All right, our fifth, I know there's a lot of stuff that came out, guys. These are just the things that I want to cover, so if I'm not covering something that you want me to talk about, well, sorry, you got to let me know, and I will cover it. But apparently there is another Transformers film in the works, which didn't really shock me, because I heard there were, like, you know, seven Transformers films in development or whatever, some of which were animated, some of which were live action. But apparently there is a new Transformers 6, like sequel to the last Michael Bay film in the works, being directed by Stephen Cappell Jr., which I don't know if I've heard of him. I don't know who that is. If he's... Oh, he did Creed 2. And Creed 2 was a good movie. I like that movie. Apparently, he has casted Anthony Ramos to be the lead in Transformers 6. Let's see what we got here. Paramount and Hasbro have tapped Creed 2 helmer Stephen Cable Jr. to direct the film with a script by Joby Harold, whose take was chosen over James Vanderbilt's pitch for the future of the franchise. Okay, interesting. Plot details are being kept under wraps, but Ramos is in negotiations to play a flawed and vulnerable hero who has made mistakes in his life and is eager to redeem himself with the help of Optimus Prime. Interesting. Okay. Very vague character description, but cool. I dig it. Let's see. The studio wants to make Transformers more inclusive going forward, and not only will Capel be its first director of color, but he has pushed to cast a diverse leading man as well. Okay, that really doesn't matter if the movie is not good. Who cares? Honestly. But good on diversity. You know, if the talent's good, that's all that matters. I really don't care about the color of their skin. For those who don't know who Anthony Ramos is, he was in Hamilton. He's one of the standouts from Hamilton. He's going to be the lead in the new In the Heights movie. He's got a sci-fi movie that he's starring in from Amblin called Distant with Naomi Scott. And yeah, I mean, that's really it. I just don't care about the focus of like, oh, we need a diverse cast. It's like, if I don't care. Cast the talent. That's great. Cast good people. You know, I really don't care about the color of their skin. If they're good talent, I'll get behind it. But this looks exciting. The fact that it's Transformers 6, the fifth film was just a headache-inducing piece of crap. And I love Michael Bay. I love his movies. I've always been a fan of the Transformers film for them just being mindless robot action movies. I actually like the fourth movie a lot. I think the fourth movie is honestly one of my guilty pleasures with Mark Wahlberg and the Transformers. And, you know, the redesign of the robots in that movie was pretty cool. But the fifth film, oh my lord, just the most crazy, nonsensical film I've ever seen. It was just nuts. So, obviously, they're trying to retool this franchise. I know that they've got Josh Cooley from who directed Toy Story 4 to direct an animated Transformers film. They also have the Daredevil writer. Wait a minute. Oh yeah, they got Angel Manuel Soto and Marco Ramirez both writing and directing a Transformers movie. It's going to be a standalone film from the main universe. So it's like they got like several giant Transformers films in the works, and they're all from different people doing different things. So Transformers might be suffering from the same problems as the DCEU, where they just don't know what the heck they're doing with this franchise or just trying to do anything. I hope it works out, but we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to a Transformers 6. Let's hope it'll actually be good. And that is our current events for this week, guys. So running down the list, that is Paramount Plus to get Mission Impossible 7 and No Time to Die and more films 45 days after the theatrical run. The box office gets a big boost with Godzilla vs. Kong. Knives Out 2 and 3 going straight to Netflix. DC cancels the Trench and New Gods films. And Anthony Ramos cast in Transformers 6. All right, moving on to our topic of the week. For this topic of the week, because I got nothing really to discuss. I got a couple ideas for future topics of the week that you guys have suggested to me, so I'm going to cover those in a later episode, or episodes, I should say. But I did want to talk about my brief, non-spoilery thoughts on Godzilla vs. Kong. It is one of the first big blockbusters to come out in quite some time, I think since Tenet. Really haven't had much, and I am going to record a full spoiler review to go on my YouTube channel, but I did want to just get my brief 5-10 minute thoughts out there on what I thought about the film. Non-spoiler, so don't worry if you haven't seen the film. Not going to get into spoilers or anything like that. I'm just going to talk about my general thoughts and talk about the things I liked and didn't like without spoiling a thing. So, let's get into it. So, first off, I really enjoyed this movie. I really liked it. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun monster action and mayhem. A lot of cool, corny, throwback type stuff. I felt like I was watching, you know, kind of the dumb stuff you'd expect to see in the original Godzilla King Kong movies. Well, I guess there was only... King Kong has never been adapted in this Toho style like Godzilla has. So I enjoyed the elements from that. Some of the human stuff has been dialed back to be a little more streamlined, a little more simplified. So it's there. It's just not as boring, snoozer. You know, I really enjoyed that. There are some elements that I just think are really dumb. And not dumb as in, like, in a stupid fun way, but dumb as in just, like, that's... It doesn't work in the film. So there's a difference. I distinguish the... Because I call a lot of things in this movie stupid. And I mean that in two different ways. When I talk stupid, I mean either, like, stupid as in, like, it's so stupid it's fun. Like a giant lizard fighting a giant monkey. Like, that's fun. And then stupid as in just... For the plot, for the movie, this is detracting and it doesn't work for me. And again, this is one of the so without spoiling things, the things that didn't work for me on the human side. So basically, there are two groups of humans that you're following throughout the film. One is the group focused on Godzilla, and one is the group focused on King Kong. And the group with Godzilla is Millie Bobby Brown. I forget his name, but the kid from Deadpool 2, and Brian Tree Henry and Kyle Chandler. He doesn't appear much in this film, unfortunately. They're on the Godzilla side on Team Kong. You have Alexander Skarsgård, Rebecca Hall, Eliza Gonzalez. I think that was it. Yeah, I think that was it. No, that was it. Sorry. I'm trying to remember. The characters aren't exactly the most memorable characters. So you have those two human groups, and it kind of, you know, helps you shift between focusing on Godzilla and focusing on King Kong. Unfortunately, the Godzilla characters don't work. And that's the Millie Bobby Brown, Kyle Chandler, Brian Tree Henry storyline. And part of the reason, without spoiling it, is honestly, it's the writing and it's a little bit of the acting. The performers, because I really like Millie Bobby Brown. I'm a big Stranger Things fan. I think she does a great job as an actress. What detracts, it's not necessarily the actors, it's the script and what they are doing. They are kind of acting like they are in a different movie. And a lot of, like, really bad plot conveniences happen. Like, this isn't really a spoiler thing, but there's literally one of those characters that I mentioned. They're in a secret facility that they're not supposed to be in. And there is a door with, like, it's like the dumbest lock in the history of cinema, because it's a lock with computer lock, so it's got, like, or a digital screen lock, so it's got, like, the little buttons that say lock one, lock two, lock three, and this character is looking at the lock and it's like, oh, how am I gonna unlock this thing? I don't know what to do. And then they literally hit lock one, lock two, lock three, poof, door opens. It's like, what? What? And it wasn't the character. It wasn't, because those of you who have seen the film probably know what I'm talking about. It wasn't the character, wasn't the actress or actor. It was the fact that that was just a stupid thing to do just to get a door opened. Like, I don't understand why. There's a lot of stupid stuff that comes from, unfortunately, this side of the film that really just kind of, these actors are acting like they're in a different film than what the whole film is around them. And what they discover in their mission is pivotal to the story. Eventually, they are part of one of the big reveals in the film. But again, just the script they're given and what their characters are feel like a completely different movie. Whereas the King Kong characters, Alexander Skarsgård, Rebecca Hall, I actually really enjoyed them. Now, their stuff is kind of stupid fun. It's all this goofy stuff. There is a element from the previous MonsterVerse films that I completely missed that has been discussed throughout the MonsterVerse that has been paid off in this film that they explore that is kind of pivotal to King Kong's story in this film. And that's another thing I will say positively. King Kong and Godzilla are kind of treated like characters and not spectacle set pieces. They are active members of this story and not just giant destructive agents of chaos, so to speak. They do kind of have not arcs, but they both have journeys in the film, which is something I really enjoyed. Didn't think that we could actually get in one of these films. By far, one of my favorite sequence in the film is the final battle. You've seen it in the trailers. I guess I've spoiled that it is the final battle, but you probably already assumed that. It is the Tokyo fight sequence where all these neon buildings are lit up in the middle of the night, and it's just this giant, colorful neon spectacle with Godzilla and King Kong with an axe fighting each other, and there's a lot of fun little nods to their fight in the original, pretty poorly made King Kong versus Godzilla from way back in the day. And the plot even has similarities to, I mean, you've seen the trailers that Godzilla is framed as more of a villainous character, or, you know, he's hurting people and they don't know why. And King Kong is kind of framed as the hero. That is kind of similar to the original movie where King Kong was sent to, like, they had to get King Kong to fight Godzilla, which, you know, still makes no sense, but the plot kind of mirrors that in a way. There's a lot more to it. It's a lot more complicated. But I liked those fun nods to the original film. That's all I'm going to really discuss. I'm about 10 minutes in. So overall, I would say if you're coming in expecting Shakespeare, if at this point, if you know these films and you're expecting Shakespeare, you are in the wrong franchise, friend. Gone is the gravitas and the darker tones of Godzilla and even Godzilla versus King of the Monsters. This film is dumb, loud, chaotic, fun. It is the ultimate summer blockbuster. You go, you stuff your face with popcorn, and you enjoy the heck out of it. And for what it is, it's a lot of fun. It does not try to be something it's not. It does not try to be this moving emotional drama about monsters fighting each other, which is something that these past movies have kind of done to not so great results. It's kind of touch and go. This movie just, and for better or for worse, that stuff is stripped away for a much more dumber, streamlined, fun film. For what it is, it's fun. It's great. I can't say for right now that it's the best of the monster movies, but I will say it's high on my list. You can check out my full Letterboxd review, and again, I'll have a video review on YouTube coming out soon. But I am going to give this movie 3.5 out of 5 stars. It's a dumb, giant, blow-em-up, blockbuster, sci-fi, monster action film. But it is exactly what the trailers say it's going to be. And also, I'll say, trailers do a great job of marketing it as like an event. Like Fight Night. And it is definitely the Fight Night you are looking for. All right, well, that wraps up this episode. That is all I wanted to talk about today, guys. Again, I know there are some topics that you guys have asked me to discuss in that survey I did, so I will go through those in time. I did want to just talk about Godzilla versus Kong. This was kind of an impromptu episode. I'm trying to be more consistent, so this is me trying to be more consistent with you guys with episodes. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Vince Solano Podcast. If you did, be sure to follow me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor, and other podcast platforms. You can listen to all previous and new episodes. If you're on YouTube, feel free to subscribe to my YouTube channel where you can check out my short films, trailer reactions, and excerpts from this show, even full video files of the show. Sometimes I'll do that. They're pretty long, so it's hard to edit down sometimes. Coming soon will be my reviews of WandaVision with Eric Wells and my review of Kong versus Skull Island. That's not it. Kong versus Skull Island. That'd be a movie. Godzilla versus Kong. You guys can expect to see that hopefully very soon. Otherwise, I'm out. Thank you all for listening, guys. Have a fantastic day. God bless, and peace out.